and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great hour for you this week. We are going to be obviously catching up on the news and the data breaches, of which there was just an utterly massive data breach that I will be diving into, kind of a mini deep dive in our Breaches of the Week segment. But this week's deep dive is actually going to be on vaccine passports and why that is the debate that we should not be having. Vaccine passports are a symptom of a much deeper issue we have in society, and that is trust. And that is something that we're going to go into, the historical ramifications of that, why basically this distrust has been accelerated in the modern era. It is something I think is probably going to end up being one of my most important deep dives on this, as we are attempting to reunite the country, attempting to get on the same page, attempting to not look at the other side as skeptically or as angrily as we historically have in the modern era. So stick with me. This is going to be a great episode. It's going to be a fun hour. And with that, as always, let's start with the news. And in privacy news, and we have Apple to thank for this one, this is actually some really good news, because when given proper info, users overwhelmingly opt out of being tracked. And that is horrible news for Facebook, and I couldn't be happier about this. Now, here's what's going on. And it seems that in the United States, at least, app developers and advertisers who rely on targeted mobile advertising for revenue are seeing their worst fears being realized. Analytics data published this week suggests that users choose to opt out of tracking 96% of the time in the wake of Apple's new release for their iPhone, their operating system, iOS version 14.5. Now, when Apple released this in April, it began enforcing a policy called App Tracking Transparency. iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV apps are now required to request users' permission to use techniques like IDFA or ID for advertisers to track those users' activity across multiple apps for data collection and ad targeting purposes. Now, the change was met with fierce resistance from companies like Facebook, who basically their advantage is basically revenue streams, and they're built on leveraging user data to target the most effective ads at those users. And so this is a huge problem for them. Facebook went so far as to take out a full page newspaper ad, or multiple ads, I should say, claiming that this change would not just hurt Facebook, but would destroy small businesses around the world. Basically claiming that, well, if a small business can't target people on our platform, they're not going to be able to sell as much. This is going to harm the businesses. Shortly after, though, Apple CEO Tim Cook attended a data privacy conference and delivered a speech that harshly criticized Facebook's business model. Nevertheless, Facebook and others have complied with Apple's new rule to avoid being rejected from the App Store for iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV, though some apps present a screen explaining why users should opt in before the Apple-mandated prompt to opt out basically appears. Now, this is actually really interesting, because Facebook resorted to scare tactics with this screen prompt before you are allowed to opt out of that, or opt in if you want, for the 4% of you, basically saying, if you opt out, Facebook might not be free anymore, and so you may actually have to end up paying for this service, so you better opt in and let us track you. People aren't buying it, 96%. Now, this new data is coming from Verizon-owned Flurry Analytics, which claims to be used in more than 1 million mobile apps. Flurry says it will update the data daily so that followers can see the trend as it progresses. But based on the data from those 1 million apps, Flurry Analytics says that users, US-based users, agree to be tracked only 4% of the time. The global number is significantly higher at 12% on average, but that's still below some advertising companies' estimates. The data from Flurry Analytics shows users rejecting tracking at much higher rates than were predicted by surveys that were conducted before that version of iOS, the Apple operating system 14.5, went live. One of those surveys said that just shy of 40%, not 4%, would opt into tracking when prompted, they were 10 times wrong. Now, Flurry Analytics data doesn't break things down by app, though, so it's impossible to know whether this data is basically the numbers are skewed against app tracking opt-in by, say, users' distrust of Facebook versus another app. It's possible that these users are more trusting of some type of apps than others, but that data is not available. Meaning, I might have an app that I like and I use and I trust, and if it has to track me, I don't care, but Facebook I don't trust at all, so I'm basically going to opt out of that tracking, and here we go. We don't know, but that is very good news. If only 4% of us, when given the option, when given the information to say, hey, you don't know me, but I created this app, and now I want to get a whole bunch of data on you, will you let me do that? Most people are saying no, absolutely not. Mark Zuckerberg doesn't need any more information on you than you're already giving him simply by posting or logging into that site. So there you go. That is good news. Maintain that privacy. And if you're on the latest version of iPhone's operating system and you see that, make sure you are opting out of that data tracking, especially from Facebook. And in January 6th Capitol riot news, and this one's actually really interesting because the January 6th Capitol riot is showing us just how deep our phones are data mined and what the government can get off of them. In this case, it might not necessarily be a bad thing. But here's the backdrop for this story. A few weeks ago, Jeffrey Register was arrested by the FBI after discovering that the feds understand technology a heck of a lot better than he does. Now, Register, age 38, of Fernanda Beach, Florida, surrendered himself to face trespassing and disorderly conduct charges in connection with the January 6th Capitol riot. Register had initially denied he was there when he was interviewed on February 24th by an FBI agent, but when confronted with photographic evidence, Register, quote, admitted that he deleted photographs from his phone and claimed to have factory reset his cell phone in order to, in his words, delete what might be proof that he entered the building, according to the FBI complaint. Now, it turns out that the denial strategy was no match for the FBI's rather chilling ability to track suspects as it laid it out in the complaint. And I quote again, according to records obtained through a search warrant served on Google LLC, a mobile device associated with basically a Gmail account was present at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The name associated with that account, according to Google, is Jeffrey Register, and the account's recovery phone number is, and it lists his phone number. Quote again, Google estimates device location using sources including GPS data and information about nearby Wi-Fi access points and Bluetooth beacons. This location data varies in its accuracy depending on the source of the data. As a result, Google assigns a maps display radius for each location data point. Thus, where Google estimates that its location data is accurate to within 10 meters to the location data point. Finally, Google reports that its maps display radius reflects the actual location of the device 68% of the time. In this case, Google location data shows that Register's device was in the Capitol from approximately 2:17 p.m. until 4:38 p.m. Google records show that the maps display radius for this location was less than 100 feet, which encompasses an area entirely within the U.S. Capitol building. So there was that. And in turn, the FBI found an open source video on YouTube, state motor vehicle records on Register, Register's DC hotel room records, a parking pass in his name that he paid for, and more. All of this was made possible by that initial Google location services, which obviously got them even more information. The video showed, and I quote, Register running past U.S. Capitol police officers who were attempting to hold back the crowd. Throughout the duration of the video, I identified Register based on his facial features, his distinctive facial hair, and the lettering and image on the back of his sweatshirt. And this is according to the FBI agent that essentially was investigating Register. So that is a real good look into just how much information and sensors your mobile phone has. I don't care if it's an Android or an iPhone. Odds are you're integrating things like Google Map and other Google technologies. They are pinpointing you with accuracy, not just from the GPS, but cell towers, Wi-Fi tower or Wi-Fi signals, Bluetooth beacons around you. All of these different kinds of things basically add up to you having a sea of sensors with you wherever you go, wherever your mobile phone is, and you can be tracked in real time. And we are very glad that technology basically was not the friend, in this case, of the Capitol, January 6th Capitol riots. But for most of us that are not criminals, and I'm not saying everybody at the Capitol and the Capitol at January 6th was a rioter. I'm sure there were plenty of peaceful people there. But regardless of that, we are tracked, and they can prove if you were just peacefully watching, now former President Trump give a speech, or if you were there kicking in barricades and trying to capture a congressman or whatever. So obviously a huge, huge thing, but that is basically how far that rabbit hole goes. And so that is one of your privacy news bits of the week. And in car news, basically, we're going to be talking about Ford here because they are about to create millions of distracted drivers. And here's what's going on. The Ford Motor Company has patented a new system that uses a vehicle's cameras to detect billboards and then pulls up the billboard on the car's infotainment display in your vehicle as an inescapable in-vehicle advertisement. Now, you know billboards are an effective way to subliminally advertise to people. You pass that, McDonald's sign when you're hungry and you know you're going to pull over at that exit, those kinds of things. But what billboards aren't great at is providing detailed information like phone numbers, addresses, or even a website. And though even though these are basically large signage, they're not visible enough for a driver to simply memorize those details. So if you look on the highway and you see like McDonald's exit 3, okay, I can remember exit 3. I'm not going to remember 1-800-McDonald's or whatever. And that's what we're talking about here. And that is the problem that Ford is trying to solve with this new system. I don't necessarily know if I'd call it a problem, but here we are. Now, many vehicles now come standard with built-in cameras that are used either for autonomous driving features, security, or for providing the driver with a view outside of the vehicle to make parking easier. I know one of my cars has a camera in it that if I pass a sign, it says, let's say it's a speeding sign that says 55 miles an hour speed limit, it will actually pull up next to my speedometer so I know how fast the road basically says I'm allowed to go. It's kind of a cool thing. But what Ford wants to do is leverage those cameras to also keep an eye out for passing billboards and then use image recognition to put a copy of the advertisement on the vehicle's infotainment screen so that it's visible to the driver and passengers for longer. The system would also intelligently analyze the content of the billboard and generate hyperlinks or links to websites, either for easily dialing a phone number that's there or for bringing up a company's website to see additional information. I could also see this basically connecting to your GPS and then auto-tuning your GPS in your Ford and having the car drive you to wherever it wants you to go, or the advertisement you decided to enjoy. Now, Ford could potentially even work with advertising agencies or companies responsible for billboards so that upcoming advertisements would be provided ahead of time to train the system so it could better recognize what it's seeing and even provide customized URLs or additional content that loads as a result. I could see large billboards with 3D scanners that basically these things pick up and then stick right into your car. So for example, you might be driving by a billboard hawking a Whopper, and the passengers in the vehicle could be basically given the option to watch a Burger King ad, and the key words here are being given the option, because one day that may not necessarily be the case. You may be forced to sit through this. I actually wrote an article about this 5 or 6 years ago, I kid you not, which I'll get to in a minute. Now, similar to a cheaper version, for example, of Amazon's Kindle e-reader that discounts itself, basically thanks to ads appearing on the screen, you can go to Amazon Kindle and basically say, I'll pay $20 and get the advertisements to go away. Your family car may actually have that. So basically, you may have a discount if you're willing to endure random ads popping up in the dashboard every time you pass a billboard. Or if you look at it the other way, if you want basically that Kindle without ads, that car without ads, you have to cough up extra money to get the basically the highway peace and quiet package. This is what we're talking about here. And I wrote an article, I want to say about 5-6 years ago, called Google Doesn't Care About the Driverless Car. And it's about Google not caring if they build a car and make it driverless. What they want to be is essentially the operating system that runs the vehicle. They want to have that. So when you're in that driverless car and that driverless car is taking you from point A to point B, and the GPS, because Google owns Google Maps, knows that you're passing that, your favorite retail store, you're going to get a pop-up in your car that says tap here to pull over, and you'll get an extra or an instant 5% off your purchase at your favorite retail store. and it's going to be inescapable. That's where the retail stores of the world will pay Google an outrageous amount of money to have that, because essentially the car, as you're passing it, simply has to pull in, and they're going to get a lot more traffic. This is going to be a huge, huge thing. Ford is pioneering this, but the problem that we have here is that this is distracting. Imagine if I'm using my GPS and I'm trying to go from point A to point B, and I'm in an area that I don't know, and every time I pass a billboard on the highway as I'm looking for that exit or relying on my GPS, I have to close something out, swipe something away, you know, do whatever I have to do to keep these ads from essentially disrupting my field of vision to my GPS. Or, you know, making my GPS smaller as it shares the screen with it, whatever that is. Not to mention the fact, if they're going to play advertisements, the last thing I want to see is Ronald McDonald walking around the screen, you know, hawking Big Macs or whatever, while I'm just trying to go from point A to point B. And I really don't feel like paying for the highway peace and quiet package because I've had that my entire dang life. So we'll see where this goes. But that's obviously what's coming for the future. I think this is inevitable. You know, Ford, I think, might be ahead of the game here, but I think Google's been working on this for years. And so I think it's going to be, you're going to see this in a lot of cars. I'd be curious, though, to see what the luxury car makers are going to do, because you pay a premium, you know, for the like the German luxury cars, you know, versus a Ford, and they pride themselves on quiet and having this experience for their drivers that would have nothing to do with annoying pop-ups as you're just enjoying that very expensive luxury car as you're driving down the road. So I'm going to see where this goes. I think this will be interesting, and obviously if I have any updates, I'll let you know. But this was your vehicle news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And the last couple of weeks in data breaches, I'm sure you know, as you've been watching the news and all of that, have been absolutely nuts. And we will get to that big data breach as well. That's going to wrap up this segment. And I want to dive into that just a little bit here because I think it's fascinating. But there's also a lot of things that have happened as a result of it that I think are good. But as always, before we begin, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me this information in whatever way that it was, and that is David Walker, Jacqueline Wolf, Jason Dance, Mike Murphy, Barrett Peterson, Chris Fallon, Scott Neuberger, and Sanders Slidenarink. Thank you so very much. And with that, let's get moving and start with Scripps Health. Now, Scripps Health in San Diego was hit by a ransomware attack about 2 weeks ago or so, forcing the health system essentially down. Some of their critical care patients were diverted, online patient portals were taken offline, and this is according to news in San Diego local news. Now, appointments that Monday, a couple weeks ago, were also postponed due to the cyber attack, which then disrupted operations at two of Scripps' four main hospitals. Their backup servers also that reside in Arizona were hit as well. Providers and other clinicians are leveraging paper records, and basically the telemetry has been was impacted at most of their care sites as well. Access to medical imaging was down, and this was a ransomware attack. That's obviously a huge, huge thing. Medical centers being hit are just awful. So hopefully Scripps now is 100% restored and back online. Moving on, let's talk about over 40 apps with more than 100 million installs. Now, a research engine has identified over 40 different apps, as I mentioned, with more than 100 million downloads basically combined. And essentially what they have in them is hard-coded Amazon keys or passwords. And essentially what that means is that if I'm able to get access to that, I can reverse engineer, and then I can put the internal network of what you are connecting to and your data that you're storing with this app at risk. Now, these aren't like small random apps as well. We are talking about Adobe Photoshop Fix. Yes, the Adobe, not to mention Adobe Comp. Hootsuite, which is used by millions, essentially to uniform as they are posting on social media. So if you want to simultaneously post on like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn together, Hootsuite is one of those things that will do that. IBM's Weather Channel app as well, online services such as Club Factory and Holy, and on and on and on. Now, these findings are a result of analysis of over 10,000 apps submitted to a mobile app security search engine. And if you want to check out these apps before you install them, which I always recommend, you can actually see their security score and read about it at a website called bevigil.com. That's right. I don't install anything on my phone. I don't care if it's an Android, an iPhone, whatever it is. I don't install anything without vetting the company, looking it up. Is it based in a is the company based in a country where they have good privacy laws? So if I want them to remove my data, they'll actually comply because they have to. Or was it written in a country where I will never get my data back and they could be stealing absolutely everything from me because they've installed something in the app I don't know about? BeVigil will help you with that, as well as rate these for security. So huge fan with that. Moving on, let's talk about a company called CaptureRx out of Texas. They got ransomed. Basically, their attack was on February 6th of this year, and on February 19th, an investigation into the attack determined that certain files had been accessed without authorization. Now, during the attack, cyber criminals basically stole files containing personal health information on more than 24,000 individuals, and a review of this attack, which was completed on March 19th, determined that the security breach impacted over 17,000 patients at Faxton St. Luke's Healthcare, a further almost 7,000 patients at Gifford Healthcare, and a number of thrifty drugstore patients has not yet been determined or at least reported on, but that obviously will be a huge number, as I believe that is a chain of drugstores. Now, basically, reports are saying that CaptureRx is currently unclear how many of its healthcare provider clients were affected, nor has the company finished the final tally, and so we're wait and see. Obviously a huge problem. So if you use CaptureRx to basically get your drugs online, or you use a provider that uses them to get drugs, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about more than 200,000 people who appear to be involved in a massive Amazon fake product review scam. And I could honestly do a deep dive on this, but this is what's happening. A couple of weeks ago, researchers revealed that basically the server, public and online, contains 7 gigabytes of data and over 13 million records appearing to be linked to a widespread fake review scam on Amazon. Now, it's not known who owns the server, but there are indicators that the organization may originate from China due to messages written in Chinese leaked during the incident. Now, this database contains records involving roughly 200 to 250,000 users and Amazon Marketplace vendors, including usernames, email addresses, PayPal addresses, links to Amazon profiles, and both WhatsApp and Telegram numbers, as well as records of direct messages between customers happy to provide fake reviews and traders willing to pay them to do that. Now, according to the research team, the leak may implicate more than 200,000 people in unethical activities. And recently, Amazon pulled a slew of products from a lot of Chinese manufacturers, and we are wondering if it's because this database was leaked, Amazon got wind of it, got access to it, and decided that they were going to pull those people that were writing fake reviews. I don't know that for sure, but both of those things just happen, and that's obviously a very serious problem. Moving on, I want to give you guys an update on the Washington, D.C. Metro Police. I talked about this on my last radio show, not my one with the most controversial interviews, but the one before that. They were hit, if you recall, in information, very sensitive information for the DC Metro Police, including on their informants, was stolen by the Babic ransomware gang. This gang is thought to have ties to the Russian government as well, so that's obviously a huge, huge problem. This past Friday, mid-May, around May 13th or whatever that was, Babic said that it published its full data on the Washington Metro Police Department, claiming that the department's payment offer wasn't enough to prevent the release. And so they just dumped it out there. And I quote, "We published the full data of the police department, including HR gang database. You will find a full range of all data. This is an indicator of why we should pay." Basically, if you don't offer them enough, they're essentially going to put it out there. And that's what happened to the DC Metro Police. That is a huge problem. We will see what happens with obviously all of their confidential informants and all of that. Huge problem. Moving on. Let's talk about Valor Solutions. Excuse me, United Valor Solutions. They're in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Now, they're a contractor for the Department of Veteran Affairs, or VA, that provides disability evaluation services for both the VA and other government agencies as well. A database containing the personal and protected health information of almost 200,000 U.S. military veterans was discovered to be accessible online. Now, the database contained the veterans' names, dates of birth, contact information, medical information, appointment information, unencrypted passwords, so that's awesome, and billing information, and this could be accessed, all of this could be accessed without a password. You just have to know where to go online. The database could have been viewed and downloaded by anybody, and this information in the database could have also been altered or deleted. Basically, this was wide open for everybody to see. Now, it's unclear for how long this database was exposed. However, United Valor Solutions says the database only appeared to have been accessed by internal addresses to that organization and also the researchers that alerted them to this. So, we hope that's true. We hope no veterans just got hit. But heads up, if you're a vet and you use the VA and you've had a disability evaluation through the VA or another government agency, you might want to inquire to make sure that your data is covered and protected. United Valor may also owe you credit monitoring as well. Moving on, we are in the graduation season here in mid to late May. And we have basically the ability to purchase caps and gowns, and that's exactly what it is. Well, we're talking about Herf Jones, who is a graduation cap and gown vendor, and you know where I'm going with this. But here's what's going on, and this one is actually really interesting. Now, a woman named Maria Ochoa, who is a psychology senior in college, tweeted about her debit card information being stolen a week ago Sunday or so, and received numerous replies from other students that had similar experiences.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.